This week's episode of the Shrink Tank podcast is brought to you by Pixel Eyewear. These stylish designer computer glasses are made to filter artificial blue light produced by screens that we use every day. To save $5 off your first pair, use the coupon code SHRINKTANK.
If psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it Shrink Tank.
A new paper reveals more intelligent people are quicker to learn and unlearn.
90% chance that there's some like weird animal out there.
Yeah. Stern's been doing this forever. And far more extreme.
From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville, and we have got a great show for you guys today. Our trending topic is the Trump presidency season one. First, let's meet our Charlotte panel. Dr. Emma Kate Wright is there in the room. Emma Kate, how are you?
I'm doing well today.
You look like you have woven your own clothing today. Why is that?
Well, this is just a very comfy sweater, and it's sweater weather, so I'm just happy. Very happy. And I'm drinking pumpkin coffee, and I feel very basic, but I'm still
You're
happy.
Super basic.
But you are basic. Does sweater weather make you happy?
It does, because I like being able to snuggle up to something kind of warm.
With yourself?
Yeah, with myself.
I like how you said to something.
Yeah, no,
she
I did taste something.
but snuggle up to this refrigerator.
Yes, to this cold refrigerator. No, yeah, I just like sweaters and pumpkin.
Yeah, I don't like sweater weather or sweaters. I don't like them. Sweaters make me itchy. They're just too itchy. Even the good ones are itchy for me.
It doesn't accentuate your figure, Dave. That's
no,
the problem.
That is definitely
the problem. I like sweater vests.
Yeah, you do.
I do. Yeah.
That's because the librarian growing up was his only friend.
No, I was a librarian.
And you were your only friend.
Frank was a librarian in training with the sweater vest. Then he came to love it. Well, Dr. Frank Gaskell is here. You've already heard him. And Frank, you like yourself a sweater vest. What other first of all, are you a sweater weather kind of guy?
I love sweater weather.
More so than like beach weather.
Yeah. Yes. Unless I'm at the beach. Then it's different.
Anything that has Frank putting on more clothes rather than less clothes, I'm all for.
Yeah,
yeah,
me too.
I made a rule while I was away, I made a rule that I will only wear jeans and not tuck in shirts and not wear ties for the rest of my career. And I've stuck to it.
Because those were the things that were lacking that he needed to step away from to reset.
It's just faster and easier.
Faster and
all
easier.
All that lost time tucking in shirts. Although I will say, Dave, when you take a sabbatical, I do think you will have a longer life if you don't tuck in, you know, shirts, just based on your track record.
I know. Seeing as I've broken a finger tucking in a shirt and broken a finger making my bed. Both of which are true. Those are true stories.
And losing a tooth while eating a salad.
Yeah. It was a bell pepper, actually.
Mm-hmm. And breaking a rib going down a water slide.
I did break a rib going down a water slide. And I kept it to myself because Frank and I were at a conference together. And Frank came into my room to watch TV. And I was laying in my bed on the other side of the room in just absolute misery. But there was no way I was ever going to tell Frank that I cracked a rib on the water slide. There just wasn't. I was never going to tell him. Yeah. All right. Well, our certified Asian, Jonathan Hederle, is here. He rounds out our panel. And Jonathan, before I ask you about your Being Human segment, tell me if you are a sweater weather kind of guy.
Oh, absolutely. Growing up in Washington State, I hate the humidity here. So I'm accustomed to sweaters and hoodies, things along those lines. Definitely love it.
All right, cool. So what awesome story have you found for our first segment that we call
Being Human?
So brain scans show who is more likely to commit suicides. Now, scientists have discovered that suicidal tendencies can be identified by the activity of neurons in a major breakthrough which could help doctors determine who is seriously at risk of taking their own life. Researchers discovered that the brains of people who are suicidal react very differently when processing emotive concepts such as death and cruelty. Using brain imaging technology, they were able to predict with 91% accuracy whether a person was in the controlled or suicidal group. It was also able to pick out the 9 people who had actually attempted suicide with 94% accuracy. Frank, what do you make of brain imaging to predict suicidality?
I was stunned by this article. And it, in the article, it actually shows the activity in the brain of people who had attempted suicide versus the control group. And it is visually, it's amazing. And the suicide group, when they were exposed to the negative words, I believe it was death or death, trouble, and cruelty, those parts of their brains lit up in a way that the control group did not. And when I see studies like this, I just, let's all get our brains scanned and figure out how to change this, because that's a 94% accuracy is unheard of.
Yeah, no, that statistic blew me away too. And I just kept thinking about if we could increase the specificity of these scans, so, you know, we do more research with more people and we get really strong accuracy rates like this again, you know, this could be revolutionary in terms of if you have a client or if you go to the emergency room because you are having active suicidal ideation, you know, this could completely change how they do risk assessments in the hospitals, where they send you in there to get a brain scan and they say, okay, you know, this is the pattern of activation and we know that this is potentially indicative of somebody following through with suicide. That could be unbelievable in terms of just creating more safety for some of these individuals.
But is there a chance that it's just, I mean, like a brain scan is like hugely expensive. It's intrusive in a way. Can't you just like do a good risk assessment or a suicide assessment and get the same result? I mean, does this give you a result over and above that?
I mean, it's hard to say, because I think, you know, this is thinking future forward, where if they can, with larger sample sizes, be able to do this. You know, there's always a level of, you know, we don't have control over how people are going to act. But if we can find one other way to try and safeguard against them following through, and I think this would be for more extreme cases. But
well, and I think it takes out of an individual's hands the ability to say what they think others want to hear to lower the risk assessment, to where if they cannot control the activation of their brain when hearing certain trigger words, I don't see this replacing traditional risk assessment. I see it as complementing and enhancing that, so that when you find somebody that, man, their affect and what they're telling you doesn't seem to suggest what another person is afraid of or worried about, the brain scan can really maybe tip the scale one way or the other.
And this, I mean, you guys are going to judge me for this. But
Howard Stern?
No.
Tommy John's underwear?
Tricorders from Star Trek. Like, we already have some stuff like that.
Who?
Portable medical scanning devices. But I don't see any reason why in 10 years or 15 years that this would need to be an invasive procedure. And it's a ways off. Like everything in medicine seems to be a ways off, but I feel like this could change the way we prevent suicide.
Well, not only that, and I get the idea of it's right now, it's very it's extremely costly, but you know, all of the studies that talk about like how much revenue our nation loses to mental illness and mental health. Imagine if they would turn around and invest money in preventative care and early intervention, how much that would level out. Like, it would pay for all of these advanced techniques and protocols very easily.
Yeah, I like the idea of it if it got to a point where it was like, you could get more information or better information other than just asking somebody some good questions. But here's the thing. This is kind of in the other direction. I love all these little new tech things that are coming up. I like the chat bots. I like the scans. I like the genetic testing for medicine. I think that's awesome. And it makes me a little crazy when people in our profession poo-poo that stuff out of hand because they're afraid it's going to cost them business or something like that. That just makes me nuts. I mean, it feels like this is only going to make our work so much better and so much more effective. What do you guys think?
I think everybody has the capacity to feel threatened by other things that makes them feel obsolete or less necessary. I think there's probably a level of vanity or hubris that we are so self-important and needed in other people's lives. Like, successful therapy is when people don't need my support and services anymore. They've taken on coping strategies and skills to manage their own life.
Yeah, I mean, a part of the job here is we don't want people to be coming to us forever. We want them to get better and be able to be successful on their own. And so if there are other tools and things that are going to expedite that process, to me, I think that's great.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of the thing, it's been going on in psychology for a long time, psychology and counseling, I'll put those two together, is that you have a lot of people in our profession that are very down on medicine. And I'm like, do you actually work in this field? Like, do you, I mean, you have people that come in, they have like flaming anxiety disorders or bipolar disorder or extreme, you know, like very severe depressions. It's like, and you're not going to think about medicine as a first line treatment for that. So I think we're going to see some pushback on these kinds of things with technology, with chatbots, and with these scans and that kind of stuff. But to me, it just helps us. It does nothing but help us. All right. Well, let's shift gears and talk about our trending topic today. And this is a good one. We have no idea where this is going to go, but we are rounding the corner to the first year of the Trump presidency. That is just a weird thing to even say or think about. But we are year one of the Trump presidency, and we've been thinking about it like a TV series. It's like a really bad reality TV show or just an outrageous television series. So I want to ask you guys, have you had any thought about who would play who, like in all these characters in this series of, and you know, it's going to be at some point, it might not be a series, but there's going to be some movies about it that are going to be just outrageous. Who's going to play Trump or Melania or Bannon or Jeff Sessions or Scaramucci or the Trump boys? Got any ideas for casting before we get into it?
I've got a good one for Kellyanne Conway.
Good.
And this actor actually said he wants to play her on some show, but it's Dennis Leary as Kellyanne Conway.
Oh, that is so great. Yeah.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. I could see him or Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. Oh, well, they both get mistaken for one another, too.
Yeah, right.
You know, I think Trump just kind of his physical appearance, he was born to be a VeggieTale episode, like a like a yellow squash with a, you know, blonde rug on top of his head. But, you know, it'd be fun to take this first year of Trump White House and turn it into a sitcom. You could rename it Who's the Boss or Silver Spoons or The Apprentice, the White House edition. The one person that stuck out with me is, well, two, Sarah Huckabee. I think she just needs to be played by a hand puppet. So you just have a hand puppet where Trump is halfway off camera and just like repeating stuff and moving the hand puppet. And then the other is Bannon. I think Rosie O'Donnell would just kill it as Bannon.
Oh, perfect. I've got a good one for Trump.
Go ahead.
All right. This is actually like serious casting for Trump. How about Alan Tudyk?
Who's that?
That'd be pretty good.
Who?
Yeah. He was on Serenity.
What?
You've seen him. He's a character actor. He's done a ton of stuff, ton of movies. He's done voice work, but he was in 42. Did you see the Jackie Robinson movie, 42?
No.
Did you see, he's in Serenity. He was in A Knight's Tale. Anyway.
Oh, yes. Okay. I know that.
He was the redheaded guy in Knight's Tale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, all right. What were you going to say, Emma Kate?
We were talking about this, and actually Elizabeth Hurley looks a lot like Melania Trump.
Yes.
And I just think of her role in like Bedazzled, where she plays. That's not the right name for the movie where she plays the devil. Maybe it is Bedazzled, but anyway, I thought she would be good. And then I don't know why, but I would want to insert some comedy in there. So I just want to like figure. I don't know who she could play, but I would want Ellen DeGeneres on there. Like, I just would want that. I would want her to take time off of her talk show so she could bring some laughs to people.
Keenan Peele. One of those guys, I can't tell which one is which, should play Ben Carson.
I cannot tell which one is which. Frank.
No, like, I don't know which one is Keen and which one's Peele. Like, I don't know. I know the name of the show, right, but I've never figured out who's who.
All right. Key is the guy that plays, let's see. He plays doesn't he play angry Obama?
In the homophobe video. Who was the guy that...
This is going to go over well on
the
podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
The homophobic video. I can't tell them apart.
I get your meaning. Who's going to play Jeff Sessions? Who's the guy for Jeff Sessions? Or the woman?
I couldn't come up with anybody.
Yeah, I got nothing for him, but I've got Dracula for Mike Pence.
Oh, yeah. He's like blonde Dracula.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kate McKinnon has played Sessions on SNL, and it's about perfect. You know, it's like little elfin creature. It's about...
Yeah, maybe Dobby could play Sessions.
I was
going to
say
Sessions.
Dobby or Warwick Davis. That'd be good. All right, so we'll continue with our casting. We'll figure it out, but we'll have some good casting decisions for this movie. What do you guys think as you look back over the past year? Are some of the most ridiculous moments that are going to be in this season one of the Trump presidency show? When you think back, what stands out?
How about every single moment?
Right.
Like all of them.
Every moment of every day.
I mean, it's just been like a deluge of like just event after event after event where like you know, come January, as soon as he was sworn into office, it was just like boom, 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 boom. So if this was like a true TV show, I mean, wow, like the viewers would just be overwhelmed.
Well, they are.
Right.
I mean, viewership is through the roof.
Yeah. And you... Emma Kate, you're wanting to retreat from this. You know, you can't escape this reality TV, right?
I have a hard time.
You may not be here, Dave, and see this, but it's almost like seeing something get deflated the moment we, you know, talk about Trump or say let's do an analysis of what's going on. She's like, no.
Yeah. Can't
we watch a gardening show?
That's what's so fascinating is this is the first reality TV show that we're all in.
Right.
We're all in this. We're not watching it. We're in it.
Right. So this is
it's like the Truman Show, except everybody's in it.
Yeah, the whole planet.
It's Unpleasantville.
Yeah, as soon as Trump's wife started like bickering where she was like, I was the first real housewife or first lady, I was just like, good Lord, like what is happening right now? Like, oh my God, this is the presidential household of America, and that's what we are dealing with right now.
And I had a ridiculous moment this past week where the news story was how Fox is covering the news and how the people off camera, when they were talking about Paul Manafort and all this stuff, that they were just calling it a witch hunt, that there are now higher ups at Fox News that are offset just rolling their eyes and speaking to CNN reporters about how horrible it is to work at Fox.
And how embarrassed they are. Just,
yeah.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that's going to continue to blow up from this first year is just whatever level of collusion with Russia. Because to me, that is something that even some of the hardline Republicans or conservatives, like that is something I think that when you think of sort of like national security and military and patriotism, I think that's a line a lot of them cannot tolerate.
But they're not. That's what's so crazy, that they are not speaking. There are a couple. The ones that are retiring are speaking out, but they're just not. I don't know if they're afraid of them or what, but I don't know.
You've got Corker, Flake, and McCain, and McCain's got a terminal illness, and the other two are retiring. And none of the other Republican senators or anybody that's got any heft to them in terms of influence are really going at this aggressively as you would hope that they would if they had even a shred, an ounce of integrity. It is bizarre.
Yeah.
It's weird.
You know, there's another little angle here. I don't know. I'll just take a stab at it. But in terms of talking to someone who has traits of narcissism or is narcissistic, and you want to have a conversation with them about the facts or trying to get at an issue, they're so slippery that it becomes impossible to get at the real issue. So I don't know, have the Republicans, they're in that mindset. Like, we can't get at the real issue, so what's the point?
Yeah, but they could make public statements and they could oppose him and they could stand up for things. I mean, they might not be able to wrestle him to the ground, which I don't think they can. But they can certainly stake a public position.
Sure, but then they don't want to lose their job. Like, and that's the thing that I think it all boils down to. It's like they all try to collude and cover up for one another, and it's just, I mean, they're politicians.
Well, there's this pragmatic part of what you hear talked about in Republican circles of, like, we got to hang together because we want these tax cuts, and it's, first of all, highly debatable whether that's even good for anybody, these tax cuts that they're talking about. But the second part is, nothing's worth this. You know what I mean? Like, this is not, I mean, if you are selling your soul to the devil, essentially, if you're saying all we're doing is just, you know, biting our tongue so that we can get this tax reform passed and then, you know, okay. But that's, I mean, what makes them think that would be worth putting up with this and kind of going along with this? That's crazy.
Well, and it's just, I think it goes back to discussion around critical thinking skills. If you look at his childhood, Trump actually punched his second grade teacher in the face.
I know.
And gave the teacher a black eye and didn't get expelled. There was another thing I saw where, He borrowed his brother's blocks to build a tower and actually glued them all together so his brother couldn't have his blocks back.
Yeah.
I mean, perfect. Come on. So we're just seeing more of the same.
So let's go a little further and just ask. So we get why politicians, Republicans, might stand by him because they feel like they're just being very utilitarian. Like, here we go. We've got to agenda that we want to have some hope of getting through. We're in a position of power. Let's not blow that. I get that. But what do you think is the psychology of just general people who still support him? I mean, I I'm not just saying someone who is not very bright and unthinking and so on, but just like you run into people that are decently intelligent folks that still are adamantly in favor. Majority of Republicans, 80-some percent, still think he's doing a good job. How do you make sense of
that? I mean, this is group polarization. I mean, this is textbook, where you get a group of people together who have, you know, views that maybe aren't that common, and then because they're now within a group that also shares these beliefs, then those views start to become more extreme. And so, I mean, we have a bunch of people that feel like they've finally been heard in terms of some of their beliefs and things that they want. And, you know, Democrats feel like, okay, we're moving backwards. And yet now these people feel like, wow, my voice is really heard. And it sucks.
But we've talked about this in the past. It's just being in these silos. So the day after all those stuff happened with Manafort getting arrested, I actually sat down and watched Fox News and listened to it. And I swear, I couldn't believe it. It's this alternate reality.
Yeah, it's become,
and I know people that
it's become state TV. I mean, it's become Pravda.
Yeah,
it really has.
And what's interesting is there, I've seen some articles that said that this is the news is reflecting what Trump says, but it's the other way around. They documented many times where there was a story that Fox News would say something, and then later Trump would quote that verbatim.
Yeah, 20 minutes later on Twitter.
Yeah, he's believing that reality too, and it's just bizarro world.
Well, and I think it's reinforcing what a lot of Americans already feel on to some degree, which is a distrust of media, unbiased perspective, and a belief that there is something fundamentally broken with our political system. So even if they are not gung-ho about Trump, they have a difficulty of identifying somebody else that would either be better or could really orchestrate effective change in our country. So he is the loudest voice and the clearest voice of their discontentment and their objections of what's going on in the world without offering really any viable solutions to the problems.
Yeah, and they seem to enjoy when he is crass or attacking or out of, you know, just disgraceful in the sense of how he treats people. They seem to enjoy that. So whereas other people in the past, if they behaved that way, it would cost them. For his base, it seems to intensify it. So he only wins when he trashes somebody, whether they're Republican or Democrat, you name it, when he goes after them, then that base kind of gets inflamed and likes it.
I heard a pastor on the radio. I can't remember who he is, but he's big enough to have a decent radio following, said that Trump is anointed by God to be in this position. And right. I think, how can you believe that? This is from a guy. This is two little interesting facts. He was asked about his life and if it when he had this affair with Marla Maples. And did it cost him any, and how did he feel about that? And the quote is, life was so great in so many ways. The business was great, beautiful girlfriend, beautiful wife, beautiful everything. Life was just a bowl of cherries. Like, what? You said you're happy you had a beautiful wife and a beautiful – come on.
I know. God. It's unbelievable. You know,
we
should do a show
one more thing.
On – okay, go ahead.
He had Trump Steakhouse. It was shut down in 2015, okay, 2 years ago, for violating 51 health codes, including serving 5-month-old duck.
Oh.
Really? Really?
We need to do a show on what you're talking about with why the religious right in particular how they see him and how they stand by him, but also this sort of broader idea of authoritarianism and
yes.
And how to understand that and what that means for understanding the political landscape right now. But let's shift gears and we'll come back. There's going to be plenty of opportunity to talk about the Trump presidency in season two. But let's talk about our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in popular culture, things that we'd like to recommend to you. And Emma Kate, do you have something for us?
I do. So I was actually really excited because I discovered a new artist or band called 100 Waters. And I think producer here, Sean, actually knows about this band too, and I'm sure others do. But the lead vocalist, Nicole Miggles, I think is how you say her name, her voice is so cool. And she's just got this really great way of kind of reflecting emotions. And so I guess they have an album that came out recently, Communicating, and it's pretty cool. So I think people should check that out.
How about you, Frank?
I actually want to recommend something from a website called Tech Armor, and it is a screen protector for an iPhone. And it's really, really crazy great because you don't have to have a cover for your whole phone. It keeps it real small or thin, but I've dropped it. I've done all kinds of crazy stuff. And the screen ultimately will crack the protector, and it has a lifetime replacement. So as soon as that one doesn't work, you send it back, they send you another one, and it's only $7.
Good. Jonathan?
Well, this came out in March, but I recently got to see the band Spoon live in concert, and it was a great show. And I just want to, you know, call out their latest album that came out in March called Hot Thoughts. It's a great pop rock album, and I think right now good rock and roll is a little bit more of a scarce commodity, so I highly recommend if you're into rock with a little bit of pop and funk, check out Spoon's latest album, Hot Thoughts.
I've never seen you be so enthusiastic on any social media as you were with the Spoon concert. So why was it so good? Why did you love it?
Well, the really cool thing was that they were supposed to play a larger venue in the summer in Charlotte, and it got rained out. So they extended their tour by one day. They came back to Charlotte, played in a smaller venue. So it was just really intimate. They were clearly having fun. They weren't phoning it in. And the lead singer-songwriter of Spoon, Britt Daniels, he is just dripping with charisma. So I was, you know, basically third from dead center front, and it was really engaging, a lot of fun. So yeah, I mean, they just know how to create a fully immersive, fun concert experience.
Well, I'm a little reluctant to make my doctor's order, so I'm going to say this is done with some caution. And those of you who've seen this show will know why. This weekend, the new season of Shameless debuted on Showtime. If you've ever seen that show, it is insane. And basically, it is about the most dysfunctional family you can imagine and how they sort of make it through life. And William H. Macy, who's been Emmy-nominated multiple times for the show, is kind of the patriarch of the family. And they've got all these kids ranging from adults down to little kids. And the stuff that they cover and talk about and do is just so outrageous. It is very cringeworthy a lot of the time. But there's a lot of cool, like, kind of character stuff and psychology to it. So I'm going to say if you're easily offended or if you're someone that doesn't have a high tolerance for discomfort, I wouldn't watch it. But for those of you who might be interested, it's a really fascinating drama called Shameless on Showtime. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. We hope you'll check us out on shrinktank.com. There are great articles and videos there. We want you to follow us on Twitter @shrink_tank and like us on Facebook. Our producer and music composer is Sean Beck. For Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell in Charlotte, I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville. Tell your friends about us and have a great week.
Shrink Tank.